Less game-changing insights from Orange Label, the leading response marketing agency for established brands that are driven by a fearless entrepreneurial mindset. Hello, and welcome back to the 19 Entrepreneur Edition. I'm Rochelle Ryder, president of Orange Label. We're kicking off our first podcast of the new year with a two-part series on emotional intelligence. Listed by the World Economic Forum as a top job skill to have in 2020, emotional intelligence is about recognizing your own emotions to better manage interpersonal relationships. When used in business, this concept can create a better brand experience for companies and their customers. For over 20 years, personal development company Productive Learning has taught business leaders how to utilize emotional intelligence to create powerful cultures and brands. Here to tell us more about the relationship between emotional intelligence and the modern workplace is Productive Learning President Lyndon Crowe. Lyndon, welcome to the 19. We're so excited to have you.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Well, tell me a little bit about your career path and background.
Sure. So if we go all the way back, I grew up, I have two sisters. I have all female cousins. So growing up, I started taking on a bit of the characteristic of an inquisitive person, a skeptical person, wanting to understand why all of these girls wanted to play house and tee and they didn't want to play frisbee and tag. I just didn't get it. Fast forward 20 years into college, and then I go into a psychology class, and I realize, oh, that's the mechanics of how the mind-body work. So that must be dictating how we make choices and decisions. Now, I don't think that I was thinking in college to back to when I was young, but
Sure. But
that kind of inquisitive nature as to why do people do what they do, I think that's been with me for a long time. So then I studied psychology. I wanted to understand how the mechanics of the mind and the body and emotions work. Also walked into a religious studies course, which I found fascinating because essentially that's like the fuel that you put into the person. That's all the doctrines and dogmas that they believe. So now you've got the mechanics of the mind and the system, and you've got the fuel that you put into the system. And I found that kind of combination fascinating.
Sure.
Fast forward a handful of years later, I walk into my first workshop, and the workshop was with Productive Learning. And instead of talking about the world out there and how they function and what they believe and what's going on in their system, they said, why don't you look at yourself and try to figure you out? And that's where I said, oh, whoa, I don't know that world at all. So that had me hooked. And then that was about 2010.
Okay. Well, explain the value that Productive Learning provides to the corporate environment.
Sure. So all of our work has a foundation in emotional intelligence. So we'll do workshops and seminars or coaching with executives. It could be departmental. It could be the entire company. And really what we're doing is we're helping the individual understand themselves better as a system. If you knew how your car functioned better, then your car would be better gas mileage. It could go faster. The brakes would work better, all that kind of stuff. So we do that, but not for a car. We do that for the human person, right? And so that's what emotional intelligence is, if you will, the ability to manage your thoughts and emotions. So when you do that with an individual, but you put an individual times 10 or 100 or 1,000 into a room together and say, hey, let's all row in that direction. Let's all go achieve those business goals. We're helping those individuals now collectively with their organization or their team function better. Uh-huh. But it still goes down to the individual understanding themselves, why in which they think the way they do, the kinds of perceptions and filters that they naturally have, and many of which have unconscious assumptions riddled through them, the way in which their emotions start to dictate the way in which they make choices and decisions, and then the combination of the two. And we help individuals manage their thoughts and emotions to be better able to interact and work with one another to achieve essentially whatever it is that they're trying to achieve. On the personal side, that may be your spouse and relationships or self-esteem. But on the business side, that would be productivity, the morale, the conflict resolution, the communication. So when we go into organizations, we're helping the organization develop their emotional intelligence, but they would feel it as if they were developing their company's culture and the relationship and communication dynamics.
Okay. Okay. Can you teach emotional intelligence?
Sure. Oh, totally. Yeah. Okay. This is one of the fascinating things. everybody starts to know about IQ and understanding that IQ is all about the intelligence of an individual. And IQ doesn't really change over a lifetime. Mm-hmm. Emotional intelligence, EQ, does though. It's something that can be learned. It's a skill. And so it's just like a skill of being able to, if you're in emotional reaction because you're pissed off at John at work or Sam at work or Megan at work, can you manage your emotions? Totally. But that's something that has to be trained. That's something that has to be developed within the person. And what would be developed is understanding why it is that I am triggered, what actually gets me off track, and what it takes for me to get back on track, whatever that on track is. And leaders would have to be a bit more influential and be able to communicate, and a line worker would just have to be able to put themselves back into place, and so that they make sure that they, you know, move widget A down the line to widget B, whatever that is. So it's definitely something that is able to be developed at an individual level, like I said, and then it goes back to the overall company and culture.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Would you consider it a bold move for an organization to invest in training for emotional intelligence?
Wouldn't that be strange if I said yes?
Well, I think that it's becoming more common, but 10 years ago, it would probably not be a budget line item for a company.
Without a doubt. When did Daniel Goleman write Emotional Intelligence? I think it was mid-90s.
Yeah.
Yeah, so give 20 years or 25 years later, all of a sudden, it has become... Science is showing that it is the skills and abilities of somebody's, or the level of somebody's emotional intelligence, is a better correlation to their success than IQ is.
Wow, that's incredible.
And success defined by whatever means you want to, whether that's financial success, relationship success, self-esteem success, it doesn't matter, all of those. Because if you think about it, it's that individual trying to go in and achieve something. Mm-hmm. And you could have the brightest person, but if they get pulled off because something goes awry and they don't have the resilience to move through that upset, then what good is that intelligence?
Yeah.
As opposed to have somebody that has just general normal intelligence right on the middle range, but they have an ability to communicate more effectively with others, more clearly with others, be able to bring on and find buy-in with other people. So they're influential.
Sure.
Be able to have the resilience to get over the hurdles and the upsets and the conflicts that will naturally happen whenever you put people together.
Yeah.
That person, you know, let's place bets. I put my money on that person to be able to go and achieve whatever it is that they're trying to achieve, as opposed to the person that has the intelligence, but they can't manage themselves.
Right.
So if you're looking to improve your organization, you could look at the hard skills, right? So maybe in, you know, in the accounting or financial department, you're going to put people through online courses for QuickBooks, or you're going to put through accounting courses or something. Really fantastic idea. And marketing, you want to stick them into a marketing course and have them go to the local college. Fantastic idea. But what happens when that person comes up against the hurdle of the stakes are high, the emotions are high, stress is high, and they have to manage themselves and a team? Is the marketing class that they went to, or is the accounting class that they went to, going to help them figure out how to manage themselves in all of that? No, of course not. So go spend the time to ensure that all the skills that they have are able to be utilized when they need to utilize them. And that's what emotional intelligence would help that individual or that team with. So.
Sure. Have you seen a trend? What types of companies are utilizing you? Is it big corporation, Fortune 500 companies, or more smaller type organizations?
We've done it through all. Some large banks we've worked with, and then we've done some small mom and pop shops that have 20 employees or 30 employees. Typically, it's going to be more on a psychographic as to who is interested in developing their team. Does the leader, or whoever is holding the purse strings, do they have a background or understanding, or have they read the literature about how the growth of an organization, the trump card is their culture? And if what is defined by their culture is the relationship dynamics and the communication and the conflict resolution, and all of those are therefore based off emotional intelligence, if they've read that literature and they see that easy correlation between those three things, then they say, of course, yeah, we'll invest. So, and that could be engineering firms that are building out widgets. We've done banking in the banking industry, and like I said, mom and pop shops and real estate and capital investment stuff. So all kinds of industries. It really is, we've gone across the gamut. It's more about, does the culture of that organization believe in the empowerment of their individual members or their individual employees? And mm-hmm. if so, then they see the value in investing in themselves and emotional intelligence or the development of their culture. Depends on how they look at it.
Yeah. So the line item would go under training probably.
Sure.
And then they would need to justify how much of that budget wants to go towards technical skill development.
Exactly.
Versus the emotional.
The soft side, emotional
yeah.
intelligence.
Yeah.
And the studies that I've read are that a lot of the big organizations, the Fortune 500 companies, are spending between $1,000 to $2,000 a year per employee
okay.
on training.
Uh-huh.
So if that's the hard skills, the accounting and the marketing and the whatnot, and or that could be the soft skills or some combination of the two.
Mm-hmm.
So, and when you think about it, what's $1,500 for an entire year for one employee?
It's, right.
That's not that much to guarantee or better guarantee that they're better able to utilize all the resources and stay within the policies and procedures of your organization mm-hmm. and be a better producer. It seems so simple to
me.
Seems
like a no-brainer,
It
right?
seems like a no-brainer. Like I said, I'm quite biased because that's what I do.
So we've talked a little bit about it, but explain the benefits that a high EQ has on communication and leadership specifically in an organization.
In order to get a group together and move in the same direction, you're going to have to overcome a lot. Because you put two people together, there's going to naturally be conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Because you and I don't see the same way on everything, do we?
Right.
Of course not, right? Even identical twins don't see exactly the same way and feel exactly the same way about anything. So when you put an organization together of 10, 100,000 people, you now have to bring all of these people from all of their disparate backgrounds and information understanding and how they respond and react to stuff and say, hey, we are going there.
Mm-hmm.
And let's all row in the same direction. But now you're going to have 10 or 100 or 1,000 different ideas of how to do that. And what happens when agreements aren't hit? And what happens when conflicts happen? And what happens when stress is high because there's a time crunch? So a leader has to be able to manage themselves enough to influence all of those people
mm-hmm.
in order to help them see themselves and understand themselves so that they can recover and move back into moving towards whatever that yonder star is, whatever that point on the horizon, which would be their mission, right?
Sure.
Their mission based on their values and their purpose. So it's not just saying, here's where we're going. It's then being able to manage everybody through that with the ability to bring somebody on board when they are off. And the way in which I would work with you may be different than I work with Megan, maybe different than I work with John,
mm-hmm.
because you hear things in a certain way. So a leader has to be able to adapt to the audience that they are working with.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that they have to be able to manage themselves to get into the right state of mind, and also be perceptive enough to realize, I've been working with Rochelle for a year, and now I see the way in which to work with her is XYZ. She likes to be brought in this way. She likes to work through conflict this way. So now I'm going to go work with you that way.
Mm-hmm.
So a leader, let's just say they have 5 or 7 direct reports, would want to be able to manage themselves and understand how to work with those people that they are using as their direct reports to go then influence their direct reports. And so just chain of command down and on through the organization.
Do you use any personality tests, self-assessments? There's the love language model. There's all these models out there on how to connect with others, how to resolve conflict. Is there any one standard that you use, or do you believe in kind of taking bits and pieces from everywhere?
I've probably taken most of them, the Enneagrams and the DISCs
sure.
and the Myers-Briggs and all of that fun stuff. I find them fascinating, interesting, but also static snapshots of an individual at a certain day at a certain time.
I could see that.
Right? And we're such dynamic individuals. I mean, talk to me on Monday versus talk to me on Wednesday afternoon versus talk to me on Friday morning, and you may be feeling very different about how you look at me or how I'm engaging with the world. So I think they're interesting and relevant points of information, but should they be taken carte blanche and as the way in which I am always and forever?
Right.
No, I think that would be very short-sighted. But they do give some tendencies and characteristics, but a lot of times what I find is those courses or those tests, they don't tell you how to then manage yourself to adapt to different kinds of environments. And for a lot of it, depending on the kind of course that you're taking, if it's really just, you know, literature feedback that they're giving you, text, then it's hard to actually gain the learning from that, because learning is best done through engaging all as many of our senses as we can. So through experience is where we start to learn the most and retain that learning. If you were to compare taking a paper test and getting a, you know, a text or literature back on who you are versus going through a in-person experiential training or workshop where you have got to interact and you're going to have your reactions and your responses and then you're going to have your debrief, I would give 10 times the value to that interactive workshop where you will see your own response. You will feel your own response, and then you're going to have to talk through that and be able to manage through that. And that's like if you and I wanted to play basketball and I wanted to improve your free throws from 40% to 90%, we could talk theory all day, right? We could talk about the history of basketball and the great basketball players and great plays. Did that improve your free throw skills?
No.
I'd rather just get you out on the basketball court and let's just start throwing and talk about your hands and talk about what you want to look at and how you want to place your... That's experiential learning, and that's going to be so much better for that basketball player. Same with the person that's trying to be a better leader or somebody that's trying to communicate better or somebody that's trying to be better at making decisions because they're wishy-washy. Let's put you into a situation where you've got to make those decisions and choices. You have to make those communications. You have to deal with the conflict right here. And then let's break it down. And let's pull it out. And let's see why you react the way you do, because that's different than John, than Sally, than Megan. So if we can understand you and they can understand themselves, all of a sudden you have people that know the human system, their system, better. So therefore they can better achieve what they're trying to in whatever that communication is. So leaders need that skill, I think, in order to be able to manage through just the dynamic platform of playing the game of business. And some of the tests of DISC and Myers-Briggs, interesting, but they're not dynamic. They don't give you enough feedback as to all the different contexts that play out in business.
Thank you for listening to the 19 Entrepreneur Edition with Lyndon Crowe, Part 1. To learn more about productive learning, check out our show notes or visit productivelearning.com. If you have additional thoughts on this topic, send us an email. You can send questions, comments, and more to info@orangelabeladvertising.com. A special thank you goes out to our contributors, studio manager Kelsey Phillips, Micah Panzich, who edits our show, and Ashley Reese, content writer. Be sure to subscribe to The 19 on iTunes and Google Play, and if you like what you heard today, leave us a review.